Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome. Joining me today to share the 10 spiritual books that inspired her the most on her life journey is retired intensive cardiac care and hospice nurse and now full-time intuitive psychic development teacher, medical intuitive, awakener of souls, and multidimensional seer, Nancy Rebecca. With over two decades of intense study of the human energy field and over 15 years of teaching student programs that define and normalize our concept of being intuitive, Nancy Rebecca co-founded intuitivemind.org, which offers meditation tools, workshops, online programs, and community support to help others cultivate their intuitive abilities and heal with humanity. Nancy Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, you had an incredible awakening
that
sent you, you were down on your knees, as you said, looking up to the heavens, asking God, why do people have to die? Yeah. And the only way that you could find an answer was to look for a book.
Yes.
Yeah. So, was that the first time that you looked at a spiritual book?
It was the very first time. I had no concept of the spiritual world, as probably most people. It's like, you know, I really thought from that human perspective and really within that limited realm of our mind's potential to kind of grasp what's going on around us. And so it took me a while, you know, to really get it took me years to really get what was happening. But at that moment, I wasn't quite sure what to do.
So what was the book that you found that helped you?
Well, you know, I've often wished that I could find it in a box somewhere, but I think it's long gone. But it was a tiny little paperback book. And it was in 1994. So this was quite a while ago. And what I remember was I felt on the inside as if I couldn't even take one more moment of life. And I know that a lot of people can relate to that. So I was a hospice nurse at that time. I'd worked almost 16 years intensive care before that. My husband was a police officer. So we had that combined intensity of service and yet seeing, you know, death every day, you know, or crisis every day. And It was like, all right, I've seen on television. So I hadn't known anyone who had ever meditated. I'd never even talked to anyone who had ever meditated, barely knew what the word meant. But I'd watch shows where it was like somebody would meditate and then suddenly they would just feel so much better. And so that's what I did. But I actually had it in a little paper bag that I hid on the bookshelf at my home. I didn't tell my husband. I didn't tell my friends. And I hid it in the back of the books. And then it was that evening after my husband and children had gone to bed that I thought, okay, I'm going to take that book out from behind the other books. And that's where it started. Whereas I was terrified to meditate. What I realize now, it wasn't meditation I was afraid of. It was what was inside of me that I was afraid of, but I didn't know that at the time. But I thought, I'm a smart person. I can figure this out. And in the very first chapter of the book, it said, turn down the lights, light a candle. So, you know, I just went through all the little tasks and then it said, okay, now breathe, take a deep breath in, three deep breaths in and out. And I probably Sandy, spent no more than 5 minutes because I started to feel really strange. Like I wasn't alone in the room. I felt like somebody was watching me. And so I thought, well, that's a good first start. So I closed the book, put it back in its little paper bag, hid it back behind the other books, and went up to go to bed. And it was at that, I put my pajamas on and went to bed, and there was a flash of light, and I popped out of my body. Yeah. And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Yes, it happens in so many different ways, and it's always surprising, and it's always a shock, and it always changes your life completely.
Yeah, it dramatically changed my life. And I was thinking about that when about coming on, that inspiring is not the right word, but it catapulted me, it propelled me in such a way when I heard that voice that I define as God for me. That voice said, you know, we need you to go out into the world and to help people remember that they are spiritual beings. And it was almost like, you know, you're given your walking papers and there's no discussion. It was as if I knew that's what my life was going to be like. It was like, it was just this download. And it was like, it wasn't even like, Sandy, like I thought, well, how am I supposed to do that? Or what? You're not giving me an instruction manual. It's just, I listened to that voice as if it was what was supposed to happen at that time in my life. And so I keep always coming back to that. How can I help people remember they're a spirit first and they're a human second?
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about that later in the show, but obviously that propelled you on a journey, and many books later, here you are. Sharing with us your 10 best, most influential books that helped you on your journey.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's start with the first book. And you've got two books that are children's books. Actually, you could say a third, but we'll keep that one a secret for now. So the first one is Mandy by Julie Andrews Edwards, originally published in 1971. What was it about this children's book that made such an impact on you?
Yeah. Well, Mandy, so in the book, Mandy is an orphan. I can't remember what happened to her parents, but she ends up in this orphanage. And it's, and in the orphanage, she, you know, she's feeling lost. She's alone. She has lost her family. She's feeling quite isolated. Now there's this, it's interesting because as she is kind of engaging with the other children in the orphanage, she's got this different sense of self. So I really loved, at the time, when I think back on it, I had some really adult thoughts. And I think all 12-year-olds really have a lot of adult thoughts. Yeah. But what happened was, that was almost this journey of how is she going to find the life outside of maybe the tragedy or outside of her life circumstances changing. And so she finds this little hole in the fence, this back wall, a gate, and she opens it up and she goes for a walk in the woods, which is something I did a lot. I walked by myself in the woods a lot. And she finds this little abandoned cottage and she's able to go inside. So you have to understand, she didn't have a home. And suddenly in this 12-year-old, she's creating this environment that brought her great comfort. And through the book, she ends up meeting kind of the gardener who maybe owned the land. Anyway, they became good friends. And it was, she just found herself again. She found happiness again. So for me, it was about deep soul searching and almost like life just, if you just get out there, the things that you need will present itself. And
they'll find you.
Yeah.
Book number two is another, it's a classic children's story. Pippi Longstocking. by Astrid Lindgren, originally published in Sweden in 1950 and then later translated into many, many languages.
Yes, yes. Interestingly enough, Pippi Longstockings was also in some way an orphan. So her parents, I think, were traveling the world. You know, I think that they were still alive. They're traveling the world. But her, I think it was her father, had taught her this enormous sense of adventure and making this sense of adventure out of things. And really, that was my mother and my life. So my mother always had this enormous sense of adventure. And I might, you know, I would make myself this peanut butter sugar sandwich. I don't know if you remember those when you were a kid. Peanut butter sugar sandwich. And I would tie it up in a little bandana. And then I would stick it on a stick like a hobo. And I would march down the street, just like Pippi Longstockings, with my sandwich towards the forest. And that's where I would go. I'd spend the whole day, and then I would come back at the end of the day. And it was that life as a sense of adventure, if you choose to see it that way. And I loved her kind of robust sense of inclusion, where everybody was included, from her monkey to her horse to the neighbors. And she could tend to make lemonade out of lemons. And so it was just a really, she was intensely curious, which is my nature. And she, again, it was a sense of finding her place in the world, finding the things that comfort her, and finding a sense of adventure and everything. And it just, she didn't have a lot of adult influence, which was very similar in my life. Even though, you know, I had my mother there, and but it was, there was always this big sense of independence, you know, at a young age, to learn, much different than these days.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I think in those days, kids were allowed to be kids and find their own way. Today, it's a lot more difficult. Yeah.
Yes.
So quite different. Book number three is Journeys Out of the Body by Robert Munro.
Yes.
Published in 1971, the definitive work on this extraordinary phenomenon. Yeah.
Very much so. So when I had my spontaneous out-of-body experience after going to bed that night, and I traveled through many dimensions, and I had a continuous out-of-body experience for about 40 days. And I was exhausted. So desperate to find out, somebody make this stop. I thought I should go to a mental hospital. Fortunately, my parents talked me out of it. All right, so now I'm suddenly sighted. So what does that mean? That means that now I can see you. I can see your auric field. I could see your chakra spinning. Now, I didn't know what any of this was. I could hear your thoughts. So you might say, oh, Nancy's wearing a cute outfit. So I would hear that, or I don't really like her very much. And I would hear that. So you kind of get a thick skin when you get all that. But as a hospice nurse, I was getting pretty desperate. So there was a hospice nurse who was wearing flowy clothes. She was wearing Birkenstock shoes. You know, she had all these beads on. And I thought, now she looks like somebody that might know what's happening. So I described to her what I was experiencing. And she did say, well, it sounds like what you're having is called an out-of-body experience. So she was the first to name it. And if that's true, she said, I'm going to be really upset because I've been trying to do this my whole life. But she said the Robert Munro book will, I think that you'll find some help with that. What I loved about Robert Munro, first of all, I recommend anybody read it, because if you want to know what it's like out of the body, that is detailed in every way. It's normal life. It can be fantastical. But what I loved about him was he didn't die. He didn't have to die. He didn't have a near-death experience. He wasn't really in a crisis. And he just laid on the couch to take an afternoon nap. And next thing you know, he's standing next to the couch looking at himself. So that was very similar to what happened to me, just standing next to myself. So as I read through the book, so by this time I've been having out-of-body experiences for a month. So by the time I'm reading the book and I'm like, yeah, I've been there. All the places I passed through the walls, I would move through the forest. I had done all these things. So it was really great fun he's an engineer. He's a sound engineer, you know. And so he did end up creating the Monroe Institute, which is in Virginia. I will tell you, the Monroe Institute did contact me. I had been chatting. Remember the chat rooms?
Yes, way
back then. So I was chatting because I was trying to desperately find what was going on. Well, somehow somebody picked that up. And it was like this astronaut. Now, I didn't know his name at the time. I still don't know his name now. But he said, how did you know how to get to planet 21 or whatever like that? And I was like, what? Who taught you how to get to area 21 or something? And I was like, I have no clue what you're talking about. And next thing you know, I'm getting a call from the Monroe Institute, which was kind of scary, you know. And they really wanted me to fly out to Virginia so that they could study me. I was too chicken and I never did it, Sandy. But he's got several books and they just really help normalize my experiences.
Yeah, yeah. Book number 4 is one of my personal favorites, Hands of Light, A Guide to Healing Through the Human Energy Field by Barbara Ann Brennan, 1987.
Yes. Yes. So that my father's medical doctor, my mother has her doctorate in psychology. So, you know, there was a time where I went to stay with them for a week to just see if maybe I could get some good sleep because I was not sleeping well every night. And they believed me. They believed that I was having that I was a normal person having abnormal experiences. And I was still going to work every day as a hospice nurse. And that in itself could be a book as to what I witnessed with my clairvoyance. So my dad said, well, let's go to Borders Books and let's see if we can find something that can relate to the experience that you're having. And oh, we scoured that whole book. And we found it actually in the medical section, which surprised me. And he pulled the book out and he opened it and it was full of those color pictures. And that's when I first learned it was called an aura. And she, I think she's an aeronautical engineer or something.
I think she was definitely something like that. Yeah.
Way ahead of her time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it just, it gave me some words. Now, in reading it, I felt it was a little fantastical for me, interestingly enough, even though I could see it was still like way, I wasn't there yet, but I read it several times to try to digest it, but it was a very, again, a book that helped normalize my experiences.
It really helps people understand the energy body, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. And seeing the spirits around, because I could see spirits around, I could see angels around. She helped to kind of explain, you know, that they're helping us, you know, not to be anything to be afraid of.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the first time I came across the idea that, you know, scars on the body can sometimes be associated with a past life experience. Yes. And that surprised me. But I knew people who'd had scars on their body and had flashbacks.
Yes, of how and they
how they got it. Yeah.
Knife. Yeah, they had been stabbed with a knife and they bring that scar into this lifetime. Mm. There was just so much to digest for my life that, you know, I was a mother, I was a wife. We were both, my husband and I, both in service fields. Our kids were preteens. You know, we, it was a lot to digest, but it's still, I still have all the worn pages on it. It's very thin, you know, where I've turned, you know, the cover so many times. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she was the preeminent, you know, teacher of energy healing of her time.
Yeah. And I still get surprised. So I'm honored to be able to talk about her. I think she's now passed.
Yes, she has. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm surprised that people have not heard of her.
So book number 5, Male and Female Energies, The Balancing Act Series by Mary Ellen Flora, published in 1997.
Yeah. She's another one that's was way ahead of her time, because at the time I read it, I think that book, well, it was 1997. So I probably read it, you know, about 7 years later. I didn't totally get the male and the female aspects of the body, and that we carry both those frequencies within our body, and that they, in that balanced state, helps us to be the best versions of ourselves. And so it really helped, like, you know, communicating, you know, between men and women. How do you enhance your communication? Do you turn up your male energy dial when you need to have a firm talk with someone? Or if you're, do you turn up the female dial when you're wanting to be a little bit more intuitive? I mean, I'm totally simplifying this, which is really, Mary Ellen Flora has that ability to take some complex concepts and then to be able to simplify them in a way that anyone can understand. Now, she does have an e-version of the book. I just want to say people have written me and they have a hard time finding it. But she does have an e-version, which is her most updated one. But when I went to South Africa, I was called to South Africa. I trained with the Zulu Sangomas for 3 years. So I am a traditional white Sangoma from South Africa. But this is the thing that blew my mind. For me to go through my initiation, I had to go through the Ndiki initiation first. So I needed to learn to work with my own male energy and the male ancestors. And then after I spent time with that, then I would graduate, then I could work with the female, the Ndau ancestors. What was shocking, Sandy, is that in the indigenous cultures, for you to move to be a medicine person or a healer, you must have those two energies in that balanced state before they will even allow you to learn anything else. And that's when I looked back and said, wow, she's way ahead of her time. And she's still teaching here in Everett, Washington. And
And book number 6 was also by her. That was Earth Energy, The Spiritual Frontier, published in 1996.
Yes. What I thought, I tended to be very, imaginative and like to think and like the science world and all, you know, being down on the earth or well grounded was not something that I valued very much, especially when you're working in the spiritual realms. You think that you need to be more up here. So I wasn't too keen on reading a book about earth energy, but I thought that I needed to do that. And I will tell you, it really, that book is just full. It's not just the earth energy. We are of the earth. Our physical bodies are of the earth. Our human bodies are of spirit manifesting in the physical realm. I mean, it really illuminated that for me. But what really struck me was when I learned that where consciousness really begins for us is when the egg is fertilized, the ovum is fertilized by the sperm, and there's this coming together in the spiritual realm. There's a lot that happens when there's going to be a new life created, a tremendous amount. And so being taught for me to go back into meditation and review that time. What was happening then? What was happening in my mother's life then? What was happening in my father's life then? What was happening in their families then? What were all the circumstances that come together that started my life in a human body where that was going to contain the soul of Nancy that was going to come through and help people remember they were souls having a human experience. So it's profound. And then it goes from, you know, birth to age two or three, the toddler, and then it goes through these different segments. So anybody can pick up that book and just and meditate on those times. And it really helps clear what do we call those early transformative years?
Yeah.
To clear the energy, because that time really influences our adult lives.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. So we're going to take a short break now, Nancy. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to a No BS Spiritual Book Club interview, and sharing the 10 books that had the biggest influence on her life journey today is former intensive cardiac care and hospice nurse and now full-time intuitive stroke psychic development teacher, medical intuitive, multidimensional seer, and awakener of sleeping souls, Nancy Rebecca. We'll be back with more of Nancy's most inspiring books, along with more insights into her work and her life journey after this break.
OM Times TV.
Maya Angelou once said that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and when I'm not hosting OM Times Media's flagship radio show, What Is Going On, and the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I help people share their untold stories. Books are my life, my joy, and my passion, and there is no greater reward than helping aspiring writers get their books out of their heads and into the hands of those who are waiting to read them. If you feel that you have a book in you, but don't know where to begin, visit sedgbeer.com. Click on the Work With Me tab and find out how my experience helping others tell their stories might be just what you've been looking for. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. OM Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, OM Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an OM Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on OM Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive OM Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. OM Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's one in five daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. Excuse me, Nancy Rebecca, book number 7. This comes up time and time again. Autobiography of a Yogi, Yogananda.
Yeah. I found myself, I don't even know where it came from, who recommended it, but it found me. I found it. And I started reading it, and then suddenly I said, now this is a book that needs to be savored. And I started because I was just reading it like a story, and it was just like, it had so much multidimensional depth to it. There were so many downloads that were happening from it. There was so much, I don't want to call it noise, but the spirit world extremely active around this book. And what I loved about the story was that he wanted to know the meaning of life. And as you know, if I put it in a simplistic way, he was found by a guru who said, you know, he needed to go out into the world and to teach, and that he would be sharing knowledge at an international level, and his immense trust and faith. And I could relate to that, because by that time now I'm working as a full-time psychic. I'm already teaching, and yet still at times, I think this happens for everyone, where you've just got such a strong sense about what you're doing, and then all of a sudden you're insecure again, and you're doubt-filled, and you're like, what am I doing? And go back and get a nursing job. So I found it really inspiring, his whole story. I felt like I could just walk every step with him. I did reread it again. I've read his other books. I have all of his books. And it was just his life in a big way but I could relate to it.
This book has influenced so many people. I mean, it influenced me. I bought the CDs and listened to it after I'd read it, and that's a whole other experience, just listening to it. Fantastic book. So in position number 8, I won't call it a book, it's an entire series. And it is arguably written for children, but adults love it, the Harry Potter series, J.K. Rowling, which she first published in 1997.
Yes. And my mother had the first edition of all the books. And she just couldn't get enough of them. And I'm like, Mom, they're children's books. She goes, yeah, they're children's books, but they're not children's books. And so after a while, she got so excited. She was probably on book 3 before I was like, all right, I'll read it. But what was relatable to me is, let's just say, being a clairvoyant who can see in the spirit world at the same time you see in the physical world, if you read Harry Potter and you in the fantastical realms of the world of the muggles, and then they pass through, you know, at the train station, and then they end up on the train, and, you know, they're going to Hogwarts. This is what our world is like. This is what it looks like through my eyes, where you have people who, I'm not going to say they're unconscious, but it's like they're content and they're learning in the world from that human space. And then you have others in the world who are meant to bring the magic back to life. That's their work. And yet they're called crazy, insane. You don't really consider that real, do you? You know, and those sorts of things. But what I loved about, I could relate to Harry Potter. He just wants to have a girlfriend, and he just wants to go to the movies, and he just wants to go hang out and giggle and laugh about smelly things, you know, and yet he was the one that was going to save the world from evil. And he was just a boy, and he didn't know how he was going to do that. And again, it follows similar to the other stories. It's like, when it's needed, it will come. And it's the same for all of us, whether you're a muggle or you're, you know, magic. Spirit brings that next step of awakening and the knowledge that you need when you need it. And I loved it. I can't remember the flying around. Are they called Dementors or the
Dementors? Yeah.
They exist, you know, and we don't acknowledge that, you know, they fly around, and it's like, don't mess with that world, you know, but we need to be a little bit more conscious about it. So I loved it. I enjoyed it. It was a way to have an outlet for how I see the world when I didn't have an outlet other ways.
Book number 9 is a book, again, another one that I really enjoy and recommend a lot. It made our Sandy's Bookworms, I liked it so much. The Dark Side of the Light Chasers, Reclaiming Your Power, Creativity, Brilliance and Dreams by Debbie Ford, published in 1998.
Yeah.
What a book. Yeah.
What a book. And I have recommended that book so many times to my students because there's just no way I can describe that. So I was fortunate enough to have Mary Ellen Flora as a teacher. And it was, you know, it's like, yep, you can have a bite of light and a bite of dark and a bite of light and a bite of dark, and how to navigate the dark and how to navigate the light, and how the light can draw the dark and the dark can draw the light. So that was my reality, but I didn't know how to work with students and healers, you know, when they're I'm a light worker, you know, but they could struggle in a traffic jam along with the rest of us. So I had aspects of myself that maybe, you know, wasn't so pretty and maybe didn't fit into that light worker level. And so she really taught me how to do it is what I loved. How to make peace. Why is that part of that personality that I might not be so fondly of? Where did it come from? How did it get there? And that it was a good thing, you know, that it helped me. And then it was just like, I could just buy that book by the case and just hand it out. Yeah.
One of the things I especially loved about that book was the way that she kind of reframed and gave couples a way to deal with one another when one of them was expressing, you know, the shadow side of their nature. And, you know, she said, you label it, you know, that's Cranky Colin. You just call it Cranky Colin. You take the heat out of it. That's not the person you're in relationship with. It's an aspect of them. And I thought that's really helpful to couples that are having a hard time.
Yes. And for me, doing readings with people, you know, they'd come walk in a really contracted, dark cloud over their head kind of place, but their spirit was just brilliant. And it was, I could see the conflict. It's like, how do they get to their brilliance when they're battling with their shadow selves? And I just felt like it was much easier for me to hand out that book than it was to try to just explain it. Yeah.
I think that book will become a classic of its time. Yeah. So book number 10, another one that comes up often, Power Versus Force, The Hidden Determinants of Human Behavior, David Hawkins, published in 1985.
Yeah. Honestly, everyone needs to read that book. For the times that we're living in right now, everyone needs to read that book. So this is the part that stood out for me, was that he would do these studies. And this is what I love, because that's how I like to experience things is, well, let's try this and let's try that. And what happens to the light and what happens to people? And so he would put certain words in envelopes and seal the envelope. And then in a crowd of audience of 1,000 people, he would hand out these envelopes. You didn't know what the word was that you had. And then they would muscle test the people. And so if you have a weak muscle testing, then that means it is of a low frequency. If you have a muscle testing that's strong, so muscle testing, if for people who don't know, it's like you push down on the arm, you try to hold your arm up. And if you can't hold your arm up, that's a weak test. And if you can hold your arm, it's strong. And then you'd open the envelope and it might have a word like hate. And then there's a word like love, and it one tested weak and one tested strong. And it was like, for me, I was like, how does that happen? And so what I realized was, wow, we are so influenced by frequencies that we can't see, know, hear, taste, feel all the time. And we need to know that. The other part, it was a page turner, was when he did different types of spiritual teaching classes, you know, or different spiritual programs or just different programs. He put the name in an envelope, no, you know, inside sealed envelope, muscle test. The one that tested the highest was Alcoholics Anonymous. And that just blew my mind. And so there's that sense of, it was very spiritually guided to create that program. It comes from a very high frequency state. And to this day, it maintains that high frequency state. And so for those who wish to, you know, they're moved to become sober, have some support, have some help, that underlying frequency is extremely high, extremely sacred. So it was one of those where you just go, and then you read the next page and it's, so again, I've purchased these by the case and handed them out. Yeah.
Well, that's your 10 best list. And now let's talk about you. So you have been studying the human energy field for over 20 years, and you've been teaching student programs for about 15 or more. Mm-hmm. And then a few months ago, suddenly your world blew up along with the internet when you had a conversation with, you know, astrologer extraordinaire Pam Gregory about blue beings.
Yes.
And suddenly there were thousands and thousands of people who probably for the first time felt they could share that they too had been contacted, seeing, etc., blue beings.
Yes.
I mean, what did that experience do to your life?
Well, so it was like 200,000 or more. So I was attempting, Sandy, to successfully fly under the radar with this because I'm a nurse and I value professionalism. I work a lot with the medical community. And so it was very important that I be seen as pretty, I call it conservative psychic. And then, the blue beings came. And so you can read all about that on my website, and I've made videos of it. But I had this little private group, so you could only get in if you're a member, and only anybody knew about that if they're in the private group. So I was flying under the radar. Well, then when we connected, I'm like, well, here I go.
Yeah, you've been outed.
I've been outed. Now, the thing is, I felt definitely I was in another world, and the blue beings of light were often telling me, Nancy, you are not the only one. We promise you, there are so many people in the world that are getting this information. They're bringing the information through. And the blue beings of light, I had never heard of a star being before, Sandy. You know, it's like if someone was talking about that, I would go, you know, get a cup of coffee or something. Somebody asked me, why do you avoid it so much? And I said, well, it's just not my business. You know, it's just not my thing. And so it's become my thing. And there are star beings around, and it did blow up. But I will tell you, it was very emotional for me to read, even now, to read people having the same exact experiences at a global level.
Yes.
All over the world.
Yes.
And
I know a few. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't want to be that person. You know, I wanted somebody else to be that person. And you know, I've talked to Pam about that. I'm not totally comfortable with it. So just as recently as yesterday, because I knew I was going to be coming on with you and that you'd be talking about it. And so, you know, I'll just say, you know, I'm having this conversation with God. I said, okay, I have to really talk to you about this. The star being, like, more star beings are coming in, like a lot more star beings and a lot more information. I don't even know what to do with this. And I don't think that I saw my life like, you know, I'm having this. And so then that voice that I know is God said, okay, let me get this straight. You think that I only created you in the world. And I went, okay, I get it. End of discussion. There was no more conversation. It was like, they're here. They're here to stay. Multiple star beings are coming in. The blue being, it took me a good 3 years before I realized they're more Syrian. So there's a lot of the Syrian, but Pleiadians can come through as blue. Lyrans can come in as blue. There's a lot of different galaxies and star beings. And just most recently introduced to a new level of star beings that the blue beings of light introduced me to. And I was like, yeah, I don't know that I want to talk to another level. And I know probably your listeners are going, wow, if I had that, I would love it. But I guess what I want to say is I'm an integrous person. I want to get the messages right. And I take responsibility for, I know people are going to be hearing it. And I want people to be discerning. You know, and I don't want to lead someone down a path that might not be right. So I think about all of those things. And then it's just like, just let go, Nancy, just let go. That's a spirit job. That's not a you job. And that's been helping me.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets to a point where you understand that what's going on is non-negotiable.
Right.
You know, you don't have a choice. Just right. Get on with it. You know,
exactly.
So why do you think, or perhaps you know the answer, mm-hmm. why are there so many star beings showing up now?
Well, this new group that I've met, I called them for a long time the robed ones. They come in a very silvery diamond-like light. They do have blue on the edges. So what they were, because I asked that question of them, because they're very far out at the outer edges of the galaxy. They said they do not come to Earth. So they send emissaries. So the blue star beings would be some of those emissaries. But what they said was that the Earth, we don't know, we have no idea how incredible our Earth is. And that it's this incredible creative force that is beyond palpable, that sends this enormous creative frequency out into the universe. And it's almost like a seed planet of creativity that if they can maintain, if they can help the Earth awaken to do what it's here to do, regardless of the human aspect, that creative frequency is going to spark other planets and spark and spark and spark and spark and just bring that wave of creativity to the universe and bring life, that creative force of life. And so as we all awaken, then, you know, we become more unified with Mother Earth. Like for me, I can't walk by a cluster of trees anymore and not feel them intensely. I can't walk by and not hear them talking. That's where we're going as a society. And it's going to be hard to cut down a tree when it's having a wise conversation with you. And I'm not saying that there aren't trees that will desire to be in service, you know, to help build homes or something. I'm not saying that, but what's happening is, and I've been told this for the last couple of years, here on Earth, we're going through a creative renaissance. And when I did my research, it was like creative renaissances always follow very traumatic times. So I found that quite interesting.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why they're helping at such a level, because Earth is a huge catalyst.
So how has your work changed since then? Are you now working with much bigger groups? Is there a lot of pressure on you to create new programs?
Well, my passion is for people to learn about the human energy field and then to understand themselves, understand their own consciousness, because we're already all conscious. So we're all conscious, but that we can be kind of our own worst enemy, you know, when it comes to kind of standing in our own way. And I'm guilty of that when my doubt or insecurities come up. But So like, for example, I gave a talk on YouTube and the talk was, are you nervous system ready? So what the star beings are saying is that the frequency of the earth over the next 8 to 10, 12 weeks is just, it's off the Richter scale. And our nervous system, you know, needs to be able to handle it. And so I'll be giving some talks, but I gave like a little talk about, you know, the brain and the lobes and the corpus callosum and the nervous system and the, you know, cranial nerves. And all of a sudden they were like, wow, I just never understood my nervous system before. So that's what makes me happy, is that people get excited about their human energy field, because we were built for this time. I want you to understand how you were built. So when the star beings come in, and what's happening is it's happening even more now. Lots of people are talking to star beings. And so, yes, I'm kind of gearing things, but mostly what I'm doing is I just want, people are psychic awakening. They're waking up psychically and intuitively at such a pace that, you know, no spiritual teacher on the face of the planet can keep up with. And so what I teach people is you have your answer. Yeah. And people are fatigued. They're fatigued about hearing about, okay, we're going to wake up tomorrow. Okay, we're going to wake up 5 years from now. Consciousness is coming. And so it's just like, all right, already, you know, it's like we get that fatigue. Or we're fatigued with the corruption and all the aftermath effects of what we've done over 5, 10, 20,000 years. So Spirit's like, well, you're fatigued because you're listening to everybody outside of yourself, and you need to move inside of yourself and get your next step. And so once people start to learn that, they're much happier.
Mm. So I'm going to ask you a personal question now. A very earthy question, you know, 3D world. How's your husband responded to all this?
Oh, my husband divorced me and tried to take my kids away.
Ah, okay.
Yes. He thought that I belonged in a mental hospital. And
again,
fortunately,
that's not uncommon.
Yeah. And so fortunately, when we went to court, fortunately, the attorneys and the judges were like, she's intuitive. So, yeah, you know, so no.
Yeah. And isn't that a wonderful thing that, you know, people in those kinds of positions are actually embracing the word intuitive?
Yeah, I was really frightened, you know, because I didn't have a language yet to describe what was happening to me. And I thought, am I going to have to stand in front of a judge and explain that I can see his father standing next to him? And his father, his dead father, wants to give him a message. You know, how am I going to do this? But fortunately, it never went that far. Now I have much more confidence in life experience. But yeah, that didn't go well. But fortunately, we've had conversations about it later. And he was just like, I was an a-hole. And that's all I was doing. He was terrified.
Yes, of course.
You can imagine it. I was terrified. That's what I told him. Yeah. I was terrified, and I need my person of 18 years to help me through my own fears as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you said it just now, Pam Gregory, all the astrologers are saying it, come that eclipse next month, you know, watch out, world, because so many people will be waking. And your husband may move forward at such a pace that he totally understands.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's happening. In 2007, I was told that you could have your best friend, who's the biggest cynic and doesn't believe in any of this stuff, and then just one day call you in tears and say, I just had an experience. I need to talk to you about this. And they may be more awakened than you, who has invested 30 years.
Yes.
And
yes,
we need to check in on our ego on that one, because it's happening.
It's happening. Nancy Rebecca, thank you for adding your 10 best list of spiritual books to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's library of recommendations.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. So for more information on Nancy Rebecca's meditation tools, workshops, online programs, and community support, visit intuitivemind.com. www.nobsspiritualbookclub.org. This episode of the No BS Spiritual Book Club is also available as a free downloadable podcast at omtimes.com, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Audible, and all the major podcast platforms. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'll be back at the same time next week with another 10 Best Interview. Till then, it's goodbye from me. And thank you again to Nancy Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, everyone.